nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
So, this light, I think we came back to it back and forth many times. Okay, you have here the potential of different materials versus the charge that it accumulates. And on my end, concepts behind this slide that we wanted to address are the concepts of charge, specifically stored charge, and ideal capacity. Okay. We also refer to the material potential. In this case, for the specific electrode. And at that point, we were referring to it as some quantity U and the charge of some quantity Q. Okay, and this would be, in this case, I, where I was either the cathode or the anode. Okay, from there we derive concepts such as the maximum theoretical specific energy, which was related to the energy of that electrode and the charge associated to that electrode divided by the mass of that chemistry. Okay, from there we also defined what we thought was the ideal or the theoretical energy of a battery. And we said, well, really, it should be the cathode minus the anode and the minimum amount of charge that the cathode and the anode can store divided by the total mass, which in this case is the mass of the anode, the mass of the cathode, and the mass of everything else that makes the battery. You know, all the packaging, all the LEDs, electronics, everything associated to the battery goes in there. Okay, we talked about concepts like, of course, that associated with that and related, I should say, is the concept of energy and power density. We admitted that the system was, usually these systems are porous, and as a result of that, we introduced the concept of porosity. Okay, we also admitted that the system is they're usually stacked on layers. So we introduced the concept of electrode thickness. And based on that, we just started writing that the charge of an electrode was basically related to the amount of mass that we can store in it per mole basis, times 1 minus the porosity times the electrode thickness, okay, roughly, okay? Okay, we were discussing that, okay? We always, at that point, were thinking about this quantity at that point of the semester as some number that we have to read with respect to some reference, okay? And later on, we found out that this was related to the electrochemical equilibrium of the system, okay? Which is what the next slide is intending to say, right? But concepts also that were relevant here, we started by combining concept of energy and power. We defined the concept of the Ragone plot, which was nothing else but a plot of energy versus power, okay? Where that allows us to basically benchmark, okay, what is the performance of the cell, right? So given a specific current that we extract that gives us a point in that plot. So if we increase the current, the power increases, and we found that traditionally the energy density drops. Okay, so we have this envelope of different current densities that gives us energy versus power. So on one side we have high power but low energy, something we found, and down here we found that here we can have high energy and low power. Okay, we also introduce another concept here, and this is just language, which is the concept of C rate, which relates to how long it takes a battery to be discharged. Basically it's related to the discharge time. Okay, and let's see if I miss anything. Oh yes, and then we had this other plot that we constructed, which is the voltage versus capacity plot, which is another way to measure the performance of the cell. Okay, that's basically all, I guess, conceptually summarized in that slide over there. Okay, any questions on these concepts? These are the very, very elemental ones. This was basically the first 2 weeks of classes when we discussed this. And of course, there was a homework associated with that. Yes?
I don't know if we ever went over the C rate. I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so, okay. So, to review the concept of C rate, we specify that some batteries can discharge at a battery of 1C, other batteries are discharged at rates of 2C. You remember this part you don't remember? But it's okay. I mean, that's why we're having this discussion. So if I miss it, I apologize. But I've been implicitly using it. So basically this is telling you when a battery discharges at a rate of 1C, it really corresponds to a battery that discharges in 1 hour. So discharge in 1 hour. 2C is a battery that discharges in half an hour. A battery that has a C rate of 3C is a battery that discharges in a third of an hour. Right? And let me, to so that you can see the pattern here, a battery that it has a 4C C rate is a battery that discharges in a fourth of an hour, okay? And a battery that discharges in a tenth of a C is a battery that discharges in 10 hours, okay? So basically, this number that precedes the letter C corresponds to 1 over the number of hours that a battery takes to be discharged. And you have a question?
This will depend upon, how much current we draw from the battery.
How much current?
We draw from the battery. Is there any standard specification on how much current we draw from the battery? Because that will determine how quickly we
discharge. I agree, right. Yes, how much... So, taking a step back, to this point, I've been consciously trying to avoid talking about the kinetics of discharge, which is related to the question that you asked, right, or the dynamics, if you may, on how things actually move. We've been touching upon that topic a little bit when we started talking about interfacial reaction rates, but the current density, if you may, that a battery delivers not only depends on how much charge it can store, as given by a specific chemistry, but also by the transport limitations associated to all the parts, right? The one that has the largest or the smallest bottleneck is the one that's going to deliver the current that the battery delivers, okay? And, I guess that's the bottom line, right? It's the current density depends on how good, how much charge you can store, how much area you have exposed, what are the limitations for transporting that charge out. Okay, so in other words, is chemistry dependent, a microstructure dependent, and even of course temperature dependent. Okay, does that answer the question? I would not ask specifically that question, if that's what you are worrying about right now. What I would ask to use this language, right? I might cast a question saying, a battery that is charged at 3C and something happens, right? And I will implicitly assume that you know what that is, for example, right? And this is just, again, just a language thing, okay? So either you know it or you don't know it, okay? Okay. And I think that covers that part. Okay? Any other questions on this? I'm sorry if I missed that. I guess at some point I just assumed I covered it and then I was just using it. Any other questions? Okay. Okay. Then let's go to the next slide. Yeah, then we started actually trying to question ourselves, where do these numbers come from, right? Where does the capacity of each electrode material come from? Where does the potential come from? And we ended up looking at the equilibrium between two electrochemical phases, right? And we found by invoking the combined statement of the first and second law that, of course, at equilibrium, temperature of two electrochemical phases that are abutting each other is flat. Basically, they're in thermal equilibrium. Okay, the temperatures are the same. We found also by introducing the adequate constraints that the chemical potentials are not equal to each other. If I have phase alpha and phase beta, and I guess graphically I can write it here. The main conceptual problem, or at least the conceptual picture to have in mind, is that we have a system where we have phase alpha in contact with phase beta, okay, and they can exchange between each other. They can exchange, as we said here, they can exchange charge, they can exchange heat between them, okay, not between the surroundings, but only among themselves, okay. They can exchange, let's see, what else am I missing here? They can exchange, obviously, composition, okay. And based on that, we found that as compared to a traditional chemical system where the chemical potentials are expected to be the same at equilibrium, in this case, we find that when you have an electrically charged system, they are not necessarily the same, meaning that there could be a voltage drop across the whole system, okay? But at the same time, that induces a chemical potential difference between both of them at equilibrium. Okay, this voltage is the voltage that the battery gives us, okay? But at the same time, we find that the composition on this side may not necessarily be the same as the composition on that side. Okay, and in order to discuss this, we introduce concepts like the common tangent construction. We introduce concepts like the lever rule. Concept of free energy, solubility limit. We even address things like thermal effects on the material potential and heats related to heats and entropies of mixing. Okay? And based on that, we came up with how we can define the potential of a material. Okay? And using that, we started doing things, okay, like interpreting phase transitions between in electrochemical systems, right? For example, we find that if we plot a voltage versus capacity curve, say voltage versus, say, charge, sometimes we find that they are these plateaus that the material develops, and they are related to two-phase regions where two phases are at equilibrium, defining an equilibrium potential with respect to some reference, okay? And that gives us an idea, giving a specific chemistry as to how much charge we can store, okay? What the voltage of the material is and how it relates to the underlying chemistry, to the underlying atom-atom interactions, okay? And whether or not these are related in some way to the chemistry of the system, okay? We did it initially for a binary system, okay? And then we stretched it to ternary systems, okay? And really what we did when we stretched it to ternary systems under isothermal conditions, we didn't really look at the whole thing in three dimensions. We were just looking at cuts. So we were really looking at at sections in that were the equivalent of having pseudo binaries in when we look at ternaries, okay? Roughly, okay? We didn't really spend too much time on that. So you shouldn't feel concerned that I would ask you something very detailed on a ternary system, okay? Conceptually, at least to me, the most important part is how do you translate this idea to this other idea, okay? And how you could use it to either identify a relationship to relate it to the thermodynamics of the system, okay? Or to pick a specific composition to get your battery with the highest charge possible or the highest energy possible. Okay? That's really the concepts that I was interested in back then. Okay? Any specific comments here? Okay. So, and the next slide attempts also to summarize that. Okay? Here we found that with respect to some reference, I can relate the chemical potential or the Gibbs free energy, if you may, of one phase, okay, to a voltage, okay? Basically, in this case, in the absence of actual dynamics in the system at perfect equilibrium, which is quite a stretch, right? It's a very idealized situation. The chemical potential difference with respect to some reference, okay, the chemical energy can be thought of as the voltage of the system, okay, which is what we said here for the anode. And we said the same thing, because if it applies for the anode, why would it not apply for the cathode? And if we take the difference of both of them, then we can talk about a potential between, an equilibrium potential between the cell, between the anode and cathode materials. And of course, then relate that to how the voltage of the cell would be, okay? Which is what we were just talking about, okay? That's really conceptually what was, in my opinion, important, to be able to take these very basic concepts and build on top of that a thermodynamic framework so that we can say something about the equilibrium of the system. Okay? Then, of course, again, we stretch it into ternary systems. And if I were to ask you something in ternary systems, would be to read one of these plots, okay? Just like we did in the homework, okay, and sketch out or read from the plot. For example, one obvious question could potentially be that I give you the ternary, right, and you sketch out the voltage plots, or I give you the voltage plots and you have to identify what path it would be, for example, right, or a combination thereof, right, or maybe I give you one that is completely wrong and you need to say what is wrong about it. Okay, there's so many little things related to those concepts, right? Typically, and this is not just only me, I'm sure you've seen this in other classes, right, where in the homework assignments, you get different exposures to the same concept, and in the exam, the professor just puts it over its head and say, if he or she really understood it, then if I just twist it around, twist the concept, the student should get it, right? So you should expect something like that too, okay? So, of course, not necessarily in this one, right? But, you know, just to make the point, okay? So, okay, any questions on this? Okay. Man, I'm going to finish soon today. Okay, so then of course we admitted that, or we recall that batteries are made of particles, okay, and let's see, I'm going to erase that bit. And we introduce the concept of average material properties, okay? You remember we were saying that the conductivity of a porous material was really the conductivity of the matrix, that is the electrolyte. I think we call it as S for the spaces between the particles, okay? Times the porosity, okay? Plus the conductivity or the diffusivity, okay, of the particles times 1 minus the porosity. And then we said, well, this whole thing is multiplied by some geometrical factor F, okay, which we later said, well, this is really, we're going to define that as 1 over tau, okay? And we're going to say then that this number over here, the conductivity of the particles, is so small in comparison that the conductivity of the spaces between the particles that I can throw that term away, and that defines the average properties of the system as having that shape. Okay, we spend more than like about an entire class just arguing this relationship. Okay, and about this relationship, then we said that geometrically people refer to this number, the tortuosity, as basically the characteristic transport path divided by the thickness through which it happens. Okay? Right, conceptually we were discussing it that way, and we were saying that it can be thought as being this quantity, or can be thought as being some geometrical factor, okay? And based on that, we started proposing relationships between them. We found that the most widely used porosity-tortuosity relationship was the Brugmann relationship. Okay, we discussed that we beat it to death, right? We also, as part of the discussions of the different papers that we reviewed, we found that in general, can be thought of as having this relationship, okay? And there are some assumptions associated to this relationship. That if they are not satisfied, then we have to rely on this other more general relationship that we also discussed. Okay? We also discussed, put it here, strategies to minimize the tortuosity, because we know that the larger the tortuosity, the lower the conductivity and the bigger my losses, okay? Or the lower the diffusivity and the larger my losses, right? So the quantity does matter for transport of and specifying the current density in the material, right? So we discussed that, right? And we also tried to relate it to the processing, and that's why up here I have a slide with different crystal structures, right, and how they relate to the tortuosity of the system and how they all rank against each other and whether or not it was relevant or not. We discuss also things like, which I think it's important too, tortuosity, porosity, inhomogeneities, right? Even though this relationship assumes something specifically about how particles are distributed under shape, we find that if we deviate from that shape, the tortuosity will change as a result of the poor or non-ideal packing of particles. Okay, and we spend some time exploring that and discussing how that may affect performance. Okay, we also discuss as a result of that, and oh, before I do that, any questions on this specific topic? Again, I think we spend at least a week talking about porosity and tortuosity and the associated processing. Any questions about this? Ah, yes, and then if there's no questions, we also discuss, and there was a homework problem associated with that, right, where we discussed what the tortuosity of the separators is, right, and we were discussing those three relationships, which I just almost literally copied and pasted from the paper that it came from, okay, and how those relationships will impact actually the response of the system, and would we try to develop some sense, right, whether those relationships would make sense, right, and how we can throw it away, and whether or not it was something that we could use, right, and again the homework intended to work on that. And we also started at that point touching just tangentially on the SEI layer. If you guys remember, there was some interfacial layer that was increasing the tortuosity by a factor of 15, okay, which led us eventually to talk about the SEI layer, right, at this porous layer of 10 nanometers through which material had to go through. And in this case, at least some authors predict what the tortuosity of that layer is, okay? And well, we talk about that. And then, of course, we talk about also the reactivity of the cell and find that there is a trade-off between reactivity and tortuosity, right? Obviously, you want your tortuosity to be low, okay? And you want to reactivity, at least reversible reactivity to be as high as possible. We do know that the more area you have per unit volume, the more charge you can put in your particles, or put out, right, or expel into the electrolyte, okay? But at the same time, this same area could actually specify how much of SEI reactivity you may have if you think about it. Okay, we didn't discuss that, but now we are in a position where we could start combining these concepts, right? Where we can have a maximum reactivity for a very low porosity, okay, which will lead to a higher tortuosity. And as part of the homework, you were trying to find or propose a measure that will give you what would be the sweet spot where you would have the lowest tortuosity and the highest reactivity, right? And clearly there is some sweet spot there, right? Which, interestingly, was related to, or it's aligned within the window where batteries are typically made, right? Batteries are made usually between 0.2 and 0.6, so where the sweet spot is indeed at 1/3, as we were discussing, okay? Or as you found out in the homework, okay? So I don't know if there are any other questions here in this specific area. Okay, oh, good, I'm going to actually finish in time. Okay, then we introduce the concept of reactions. And let's see, I'm going to erase that one. Basically, what we did is we build up to, I think we spent a couple of classes just building up to the fact that at the electrode-electrolyte interface, there is an energy barrier of size delta G, okay, that basically keeps the reactant on one side, and depending on what the size of that over potential is, we basically just like in a dam, right? We opened the doors so that material can flow in one direction. Okay, and the same, well, except that as compared to a dam, in this case we can move the gates in a different way so material can come back in the opposite direction, right? And the idea is that we have, let's see, what is the convention that I use? We had a forward and a backward reaction rates, okay? And based on that, we propose what the total current at the interface would be, and after going through all the different assumptions that the system may have, we arrive to the Butler-Bomer relationship. Okay. As part of the homework, we introduce things like side reactions. We introduce things like stress effects. I think we also did a electronic contribution as a mean to relax one of the assumptions that we put in the system. Okay? We did all of that, right? We did it as part of the homework or we did it during class. Okay? In class, we worked on the basic formulation. Okay? And as part of the homework, we stretched it to much more complicated situations. Okay? And from where I stand, the important conceptual part is here. Okay? And if you get that, in an exam environment, I would not ask you anything more complicated that I have asked you already. Okay, at least conceptually, if you get any of the side reactions or any of the stress effects, okay, if I give you an additional driving force, at this point, in my personal opinion, you should be able to handle it. Okay, it doesn't have to be stress effect, right? It could be an additional driving force. Okay. And I think that's basically as far as we went. Okay, if you look at the syllabus, what follows is actually transport in the bulk. Okay, we are actually also discussing SEI formation and dendrite formation. That is not going to be specifically asked in this exam. It could be asked as part of this. Okay, to think about it as a side reaction, for example. Okay. I may ask you something about that. Maybe not, right? I also, when I try to write the exam, I try to make it fun, even if it's fun in retrospect after you guys do it, okay? So sometimes I try to make a theme, sometimes there's not opportunity to have a theme, okay? But it all depends really on how much time I have available to write it and how I feel you guys are, you know, then within a day of the exam, okay? From where I stand, my interaction with you is very important because if I don't sense that you got all the basic concepts, I cannot ask you something very difficult, right? From where I stand, that really the exam should be gauged or should be written to gauge what you have learned based on the group that you have. So the exam could be as exciting or as boring as you guys really want to make it, depending on what I have seen. But I can tell you that what I have seen so far, I've been having a lot of fun to this point. So, I'm hoping to write a fun exam too. Okay. So I don't know if you guys have any questions before Friday. Again, my office is there. Please do talk to me. Okay. And if not, if I don't see you between now and Friday, good luck on Friday. Okay? Okay. Thank you, guys.